gold, the Bitcoin hold.com. The Bitcoin self-custody is the whole. Find the strength inside your soul. Your soul. Oh, the Bitcoin hold.com.
So imagine you're watching a 100-story skyscraper being built, right?
Okay.
The absolute most critical part of that entire structure is the one you basically never see, the foundation.
Right, the bedrock.
Exactly. And usually it's poured in broad daylight, it's inspected, it gets tested by structural engineers. I mean, you would never pour concrete in the pitch dark, immediately cover it up, and just kind of hope the underlying math of the soil holds up 1,000 tons of steel.
No, of course not, because you have to actually verify the bedrock. If your foundation is based on, you know, assumptions, or if it's obscured by some proprietary mix that no independent auditor can actually test, well, the whole structure is compromised from day one. You're simply waiting for a crack to appear.
But the crazy thing is, when you step outside of Bitcoin and look at some of these so-called privacy networks, they are doing exactly that.
Yeah, they really are.
They are actively pouring concrete in the dark. They're trading verifiable bedrock for this murky, exotic math. And this week, we saw exactly why that is a catastrophic structural failure. So welcome to this week's deep dive. This is your weekly report where we cut through the noise and focus purely on what actually matters in Bitcoin infrastructure and self-custody.
We have a lot of ground to cover today. The overarching theme for this week is really that ongoing battle between verifiable sovereignty and the push for scaling convenience.
Yeah, it's a huge week. We are breaking down a 4-year undetected bug in a major private cryptocurrency that proves exactly why Bitcoin's strict, transparent supply rules are entirely non-negotiable.
Completely non-negotiable.
Right. And we're also looking at a real changing of the guard in the Lightning Network as a true legend steps down. Plus, we've got the explosion of the ARC protocol, which is making self-custody scaling, like, actually seamless, and some incredible dispatches from the BTC Prague conference on why an air-gapped hardware wallet is your ultimate defense against AI.
So whether you're managing just a single hardware device or orchestrating a really complex multi-sig vault, this deep dive is designed to sharpen your self-custody craft. We're going to dig into the operational habits that actually keep your keys safe.
Let's start right at the absolute foundation, because before we can even talk about scaling layers or hardware firewalls, we got to talk about the base layer. If the supply of the asset isn't verifiable, well, nothing else really matters.
It's game over.
Yeah, game over. And this week, Shielded Labs disclosed a critical soundness bug in the Zcash Orchard Pool's zero-knowledge proof circuit. And this wasn't like a minor glitch.
No, not at all.
This bug had been live on the network for 4 years. If exploited, an attacker could mint arbitrary counterfeit coins completely undetected.
What's fascinating here is the architectural trade-off that actually led to this. To understand the severity, you really have to look at how a zero-knowledge proof, specifically a ZK snark, actually functions in the real world.
Right, because it's not magic, it's math.
Exactly. So in an effort to achieve total base layer privacy, networks like Zcash hide the inputs. They hide the outputs, and crucially, they hide the total supply.
Which sounds good for privacy, but...
But they delegate the integrity of the money entirely to highly complex cryptographic math. The proof system asserts that the hidden transaction is valid, but there is no public check. So if the math fails, if there is a single under-constrained element in that massive circuit, the money is compromised invisibly.
Okay, let's unpack this bit. Let me put that in practical terms. It's like a bank auditor who isn't allowed to actually look inside the vault, right?
Okay.
The auditor is just handed a highly complex mathematical proof by the bank manager saying, trust me, the gold is in there. If the manager's math has a hidden flaw, the auditor has absolutely no recourse. They just have to rubber stamp a lie.
That is the perfect analogy.
Yeah.
And honestly, this is the fundamental reason Bitcoin's model is vastly superior. Bitcoin solves the supply auditability problem by making the ledger fully public.
The UTXO model.
Yes, Bitcoin uses the UTXO, or unspent transaction output, model. Every single full node on the network verifies that strict 21 million cap by doing simple addition every 10 minutes.
Simple addition. Nothing exotic.
Exactly. No circuit has to be flawlessly coded for that property to hold. No researcher has to find a bug for it to be ruled out.
I want to push back a little here, though, because privacy is obviously still a massive need for anyone conducting transactions. You don't always want your entire financial history public. Do we just have to accept total transparency to maintain a hard cap? Like, is there no middle ground?
Well, there is a middle ground, but it has to be layered correctly. Blockstream's recent analysis of the Liquid network provides a really brilliant counterexample of how privacy should be engineered without sacrificing that supply verification.
Okay, how does Liquid do it differently?
So Liquid uses cryptographic tools called Peterson commitments and range proofs, specifically bullet proofs. And what these tools do is hide the transaction amounts and the asset types, but they do not hide the fact that the supply balances, they keep the balance check completely public.
Give me a visual for that because, you know, hiding the amounts but proving they balance sounds a bit like magic to someone who isn't steeped in cryptography.
Sure. So imagine you have two completely opaque lockboxes on the left side of a balance scale representing the inputs of a transaction.
Okay, I'm picturing it.
And you have two opaque lockboxes on the right side representing the outputs. You have absolutely no idea how much gold is in any individual box. But if the scale balances perfectly in the middle, you know, with absolute mathematical certainty that no new gold was created out of thin air.
I see. So the network can add hidden amounts together without revealing what those amounts actually are?
Precisely.
And if someone tried to mint fake Bitcoin on that network, the scale would tip and the entire network would immediately reject the block.
Exactly. If a comparable soundness bug existed in Liquid's implementation, the failure mode is entirely different. A broken balance shows up as a sum that does not zero out. And it happens immediately on every single node. It would just show up as a block validity error.
So it's instantly caught.
Right. You simply don't have a scenario where fake supply just sits in a dark pool indefinitely for 4 years. The auditor running a node can prove the supply is correct without knowing a single individual amount.
Which brings us to the most important point of this entire segment. The only way to actually enforce these rules yourself, to be that auditor verifying the 21 million cap and not trusting a third party, is to actually run your own node.
Absolutely essential.
Yeah, and if you haven't taken that step yet, you really need to check out the Bitcoin nodes comparison on thebitcoinhole.com. It is the perfect resource to help you find the right hardware to run your own node so you can personally verify that the bedrock of your wealth is mathematically sound. Because as this week proves, if you can't verify the supply independently, you are taking on an entirely different, highly dangerous risk profile.
Well said. We have established why the transparent, verifiable base layer is essential. But there's an obvious friction point here. Running a node and verifying the bedrock is great for deep cold storage, but you can't exactly buy a coffee with a 10-minute block time and a base layer transaction fee. So how do we maintain that verifiable math while moving at the speed of a retail transaction?
Right, and that logically brings us to Lightning. And a truly monumental update from the developer ecosystem this week. I mean, Rusty Russell is stepping away from Core Lightning after 11 years.
It really is the end of an era. Rusty made his first commit back in May of 2015. Over the last 11 years, he authored 9,762 commits to Core Lightning.
That is insane.
It really is. That is over 53% of all commits in the repository's entire history.
And out of those nearly 10,000 commits, there were only 18 reverts. I mean, anyone who has ever written code or worked on production systems knows how absolutely mind-blowing that is.
It's unheard of.
It is a feat of engineering precision that you almost never see.
Yeah, it reflects his deep discipline from his days working on the Linux kernel. Mm-hmm. But his legacy isn't just the sheer volume of code, it's the direction he pushed the network. We really have to look at his long-term project, which is Bolt 12.
Right, Bolt 12.
Just recently, Bolt 12 was officially merged into the Lightning specification. This is actually the first new bolt added to the network since 2017.
Here's where I want to play devil's advocate for a second. I hear what you're saying about Bolt 12, but if Lightning is supposed to be this frictionless experience, why did it take 11 years and 10,000 commits just to get to this point? Like, what was the actual engineering bottleneck that made this so incredibly hard?
Well, decentralized consensus on payment protocols is just brutally difficult to engineer safely. Bolt 11 invoices, which is what we all use today, are single-use and they expire. That requires the receiver to be actively online to generate a new invoice every single time someone wants to pay them.
Which is a huge pain for merchants.
Exactly. Bolt 12 brings reusable offers. You can post a static QR code on your website or maybe a social media profile, and anyone can pay it multiple times securely, without you having to spin up a new invoice dynamically.
It also brings improved privacy through blinded paths, right? Meaning the sender doesn't necessarily learn the exact identity or IP address of the destination node.
That is correct. It basically makes Lightning act much more like the frictionless payment network it was originally envisioned to be, rather than a clunky invoicing system.
Yeah, and as Rusty's early foundational work matures, we are seeing the next generation of scaling hit mainnet right now. This week, LB Hub released version 1.23, featuring just-in-time, or JIT, channels. I want to unpack that briefly because it solves a massive headache for users. Normally, to receive a Lightning payment, you need an open channel with enough capacity pointing toward you. If you don't have it, the payment fails.
Which is the classic inbound liquidity problem. A just-in-time channel fixes that by intercepting the failing payment, quickly opening a channel to you on the fly using those inbound funds, and then pushing the payment through.
Oh, wow. So it's seamless.
Right. It happens entirely in the background, completely removing the liquidity management anxiety for the end user.
But the really massive news is that Second's implementation of the ARC protocol, called BARC, is now live on mainnet and available right on the Umbrel App Store. We constantly hear about inbound liquidity being the biggest hurdle. Does ARC actually fix this, or is it just, you know, another layer of complexity?
Oh, it fixes it by bypassing the Lightning channel paradigm entirely. What's fascinating here is ARC is what we call a UTXO sharing protocol. It allows users to send and receive Bitcoin instantly and cheaply without opening channels or managing inbound capacity whatsoever.
Hold on, wait. How does multiple people sharing a single UTXO actually work? If I want to spend my cut of the funds, don't I need all the other people sharing that UTXO to, like, sign off on the transaction?
That is the genius of it. It uses something called virtual UTXOs or VTXOs.
Mm-hmm.
The ARC service provider holds the main on-chain UTXO. But cryptographically nested inside that UTXO are these secure virtual notes for the individual users. When you want to pay someone, you're essentially just handing over that virtual note off-chain.
It sounds a bit like a digital bar tab. Like, the bartender, the ARC server, keeps track of who ordered what and settles the math for everyone at closing time on the main chain, rather than every patron needing to open their own separate expensive vault just to buy a single drink.
That is exactly how it functions. The server coordinates the transfers, but the cryptography guarantees that the server can never steal your funds.
Because you hold the keys to the VTXO.
Right. If the ARC server goes rogue or disappears, you have a time-locked transaction that allows you to unilaterally sweep your funds back to the base layer. The BARC wallet wraps Lightning, ARC, and on-chain into one seamless interface right on your Umbrel node. It really proves we can build tools that put broader access within everyone's reach while keeping the sovereign keys strictly in their hands.
It's incredible. But, you know, as our scaling networks get faster, more seamless, and increasingly automated behind the scenes, we have to look at the vulnerability that creates.
Yeah, absolutely.
The final line of defense remains the physical control of our keys. We really need to talk about operational security. Software isn't just executing our clicks anymore. It's actively making decisions on our behalf.
And there was a fascinating story coming out of the BTC Prague conference this week
that
perfectly illustrates the danger here.
Yeah, I saw this. It's wild.
Right. A developer set up an autonomous AI agent with its own Bitcoin wallet, instructing it to buy coffee. No human in the loop. But when the AI tried to spend above its preset limit, the Foundation Passport Prime hardware wallet intervened. It physically blocked the transaction until the user tapped the device to approve it.
That concept, they're calling it human authority hardware, is going to be absolutely critical. Because as AI models become more capable, we're giving them unprecedented access to our digital lives, our emails, our calendars, our hot wallets. The sources even detailed new exploits researchers are finding, like comet jacking.
Yes, comet jacking is terrifying.
Yeah, this is where hidden instructions buried in a random web page can actually manipulate your AI assistant into executing harmful actions without you ever knowing.
And if your AI has unrestricted software access to your hot wallet, a malicious prompt could drain your funds in milliseconds. Cybersecurity can no longer live purely in software. The physical air gap of devices like the passport, the cold card, or the Bitbox is the ultimate firewall against digital automation run amok. Hardware that can physically say no is going to be the most valuable tool in your setup.
Speaking of physical hardware control, we saw some serious power user operational updates this week. Coldcard rolled out their version 5.5.0 firmware, which adds support for showing QR codes of XOR split seeds.
A great update.
Yeah. And there's a brilliant community hack shared involving the Liana wallet. Users figured out how to use Coldcard's whitelist feature to create a refresh-only signer. How does that actually work mechanically?
Well, Liana heavily uses time locks for inheritance and recovery. Eventually, you have to spend the coins back to yourself to refresh that time lock. By using ColdCard's whitelist feature, you can program a specific hardware device so it only has the authority to send Bitcoin to your own addresses. It mathematically cannot authorize spending funds to an outside address.
Oh, that's incredibly granular control.
It really is. You could keep that device in a slightly less secure physical location, because even if a thief steals it and forces you to unlock it, the device physically refuses to send funds to the thief's wallet.
Man, that's smart. We also saw a major update from Bitcoin Keeper this week, heavily focused on security routines. They have a philosophy I really want to dig into. They explicitly state, security is a routine, not a setting. I want to make this visceral for the listener. Think about your own setup right now. If your primary hardware wallet died today, do you know exactly where your backup seed is?
Most people don't.
Right. Are you 100% sure the ink on the paper hasn't faded or the metal plates haven't been misplaced during a move?
Keys decay silently. Hardware breaks, PNs are forgotten, firmware becomes obsolete. You don't just set up a multi-sig vault, put the keys in a drawer, and forget about them for 5 years. Bitcoin Keeper actually enforces this by running mandatory health checks. They recommend checking your signers every 180 days.
And what happens if you don't?
In their app, if healthy keys fall below your quorum threshold, it actively restricts spending until you verify your setup. You have to run the fire drill before you actually need to recover funds in an emergency.
Another fascinating concept they highlighted is the Canary Wallet. Walk me through the mechanism of this, because it basically acts as a tripwire for your cold storage.
Exactly. To understand the Canary Wallet, we first need to define BIP85.
Okay, let's stop right there, because BIP85, derived recovery key, sounds incredibly intimidating for someone who just finally memorized what a 24-word seed phrase is.
Fair enough. Think of BIP85 as a master key that can cryptographically spawn a bunch of smaller distinct keys. You only ever have to back up your one main seed phrase. From that, your device can generate entirely new, separate seed phrases for sub-wallets.
So I don't have to manage 20 different pieces of metal with 20 different seed phrases stamped into them.
Exactly. And because the cryptography is a one-way street, if someone steals one of those sub-wallet seeds, they cannot reverse engineer it to figure out your master seed. So for the Canary Wallet, you generate one of these sub-wallets and put a tiny, completely insignificant balance in it. You store this canary seed in the exact same physical location as your master multi-sig seed.
And what happens when a thief finds that stash?
If an attacker compromises your physical backup, they are almost certainly going to sweep that single-sig canary wallet first, because it is the easiest target.
Right, they see a seed, they load it up, they take the funds.
Exactly. And the moment that small balance moves on-chain, you get an immediate alert on your phone. You now know your physical security has been breached, giving you a crucial time window to move your main funds out of your complex multi-sig vault before the attacker even figures out how your larger quorum is constructed.
That is absolute genius. It buys you the most valuable asset in a security breach, which is time. They also talk heavily about privacy habits, which ties right back to our earlier discussion about not leaking data. Privacy isn't just, you know, a single magic bullet you install.
It is a series of habits. It's avoiding address reuse. Mm-hmm. It's immediately labeling your UTXOs with the source and purpose the day they arrive, so future you or your heirs can read the history without guessing. And it's being highly vigilant about not leaking context through screenshots.
Oh yeah, screenshots are a killer.
Balances, transaction IDs, even timestamps in a screenshot can help chain analysis firms connect your identity to your sovereign wealth.
Wrapping up this week's deep dive, the core lessons are incredibly clear. The Zcash Orchard bug is the ultimate, undeniable proof of why we run nodes and verify the 21 million hard cap ourselves. Obscure math is no substitute for public transparency.
Absolutely not.
Rusty Russell's incredible legacy and the rapid launch of the ARC protocol prove that Bitcoin's second layers are maturing to handle retail scale without forcing us to give up our sovereignty. And finally, true self-custody means utilizing human authority hardware to keep your keys safely air-gapped from both bad actors and these new, highly connected AI agents.
It all comes back to ensuring that the foundation of your wealth and the tools you use to manage it are built on verifiable bedrock, not assumed trust.
If you found this deep dive useful in sharpening your own self-custody craft, please take a second to rate the podcast and leave a comment on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It really helps us keep pushing this signal out through all the noise.
I want to leave you with a final thought to mull over until next week. During a presentation by Trezor's CTO at BTC Prague, a real shadow over all of this was discussed, and that's quantum computing.
The big one.
Yeah, while we have mastered securing our keys against today's threats with air-gapped hardware and multi-sig quorums, the quantum threat is looming. Bitcoin researchers are already discussing stateful hash-based signatures, or SHA-SHAR-NCS, as a way to localize and manage quantum risk without introducing systemic vulnerabilities to the whole network.
It brings us right back to the skyscraper. You might have the strongest vault doors and the best security guards on the 100th floor, but if you aren't constantly inspecting the bedrock, anticipating the tectonic shifts that are decades away, the whole structure is at risk. Is your long-term storage strategy ready for a post-quantum world? Something to think about. We'll see you next week.
Hold your own keys. Stay sovereign. Bitcoin hold, the Bitcoin hold.com.